Hey, everybody. It's Evan from the WNEW.com staff. We are honored to be in the presence once again of Warren Haynes. How you doing, Warren?
I'm great, man. Good to see you again.
Yeah, definitely. Last time I saw you was at the Dead and the Almond show, which happened out of Penn State, which was for Obama. And I guess the rally worked, man. I guess the music made the difference.
You know, I think everything worked. I think they just did all the right stuff and believe all the right things and said all the right things. And I think people, it translated. People got it, and it's a new day.
And plus, that was an interesting show because you played both with the Dead and, of course, with the Allman Brothers. You played for like 5 straight hours.
Well, we took a short break in between, I think 30 minutes or something, just barely long enough for me to kind of change clothes or whatever needed to be done. But it was a fun night of music. I've done that quite a few times. I don't recommend it on a daily basis, but, you know, occasionally it's kind of fun to do.
Is it difficult for you to get into a different mindset between playing with the Allman Brothers, who you've been with for 20 years, and playing with the Dead?
It's not difficult. It's actually a pretty easy, automatic sort of transition. The only difficulty was what a hectic day it was. So I never really had much time to just relax and think about what I was going to do. And in some ways, that can be a good thing. You know, the next thing you know, we're on stage playing. And I thought it was a really great night. I thought it went about as good as it could have gone. You know, I take a different approach to both. I use different guitars, different amps. I take a completely different mindset approach to both the Dead's music and the Allman Brothers' music, just because I think the music deserves that. So it's for me, it's really fun. If I'm going to play that long, I'd rather do it in two different configurations than all in one. It kind of keeps it from getting stale at all.
I mean, especially since you juggle several different projects, from being a member of the Dead, you know, being one of the members of the Allman Brothers, being one of the members of Government Mule, and of course doing your own stuff, your solo stuff. Is it tough to manage all of those things at once?
It's probably tougher for our management office than it is for me, because there's a lot of juggling schedules that has to be done. For me, it's just like get off one bus and onto another, you know, whatever the case may be. It's not nearly as confusing as you might think. You know, it's something that I really enjoy. So to whatever extent it's challenging, it's a challenge that I like. I think, again, it keeps me from getting stagnated. I think it allows me to kind of express myself in different, with different outlets. And so I think if musicians had a complaint, and most of us don't because we feel blessed to do what we do for a living, but a common complaint among musicians would be that they don't get to express themselves in enough different ways. You kind of get painted into a corner and people know you for a certain thing. And I've been very fortunate to be able to express myself in a lot of different ways musically. And that is a very healthy thing. I think it kind of keeps me inspired, and with all the wonderful musicians that I'm surrounded by, there's a constant source of inspiration.
What's been your favorite memory of playing with them these last 20 years?
There's so many highlights. You know, playing Woodstock in 96 was great. The Hall of Fame induction was great. The Hall of Fame show in Cleveland at the stadium was wonderful. A lot. But I think probably the thing that I'm most proud of is how great the band sounds musically right now. In no way whatsoever is it taking on the shape of a nostalgia act. And I think if it ever started to, we would all call it quits. But I think the last tour that we just did is probably the best tour that I've ever done with the Allman Brothers, from a musical standpoint and from a camaraderie standpoint, everybody walking on stage every night, feeling great about ourselves as a team and about the music collectively. It's amazing that almost 40 years down the road, the band would still feel and sound like that.
Now, I've talked to a lot of different people that you've been playing with recently, such as, you know, Mickey Hart and Phil Lesh, and they both had different variations on what they believe songs to be. One is, you know, a song is the way you play it, and that's kind of the way it is, and it only exists in that moment. It's a snapshot. And some people think, well, it evolves constantly, and it's always growing. What's your theory on music and your theory on, you know, songs and the evolution of them?
Well, I probably look at it differently from song to song. There are some of my songs that I perform pretty similarly night after night, and then there are some that get a completely different treatment or interpretation on a nightly basis. And I think the song kind of dictates that, you know. But even the ones that I tend to look at the same way on a daily basis, some of those can be interpreted, and sometimes by another artist will show you a different interpretation of your own song. You know, when I started working with Phil, I learned a lot about how open-minded he is, and all those guys are about music and what it is and what it can be. They don't place any preconceptions on where the music has to go on any given night. And one of the things that I learned and studied working with those guys was their philosophy of not rushing the magic, letting the magic kind of happen on its own, which is completely different from the Allman Brothers. And the Allman Brothers were more about making the magic happen right now. And I think both things are great. Both approaches are extremely valid and wonderful in their own right. But being on the inside of each of those organizations, I was able to kind of study and compare the different approaches. And it's nice to see what makes that music tick, because that's one of the major factors that differentiates the two bands, you know. I think each band kind of is influenced by the other one to a certain degree, but they always kind of had their own approach to the music, even though the influences are similar.
So you're going to do some of that magic for us here in our WNEW.com studios, right?
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Warren Haynes with Soul Shine.
When you can't find the light, guide you through cloud and day. When the stars ain't shining bright, it feels like you've lost your way. When the candlelights of home burn silver far away, you got to let your soul shine. Just like my daddy used to say, soul shine is better than sunshine, it's better than moonshine, it's damn sure better than rain. Yeah, now people don't mind, we all feel this way sometimes. Got to let your soul shine, shine to the break of day. I grew up thinking I had it made, gonna make it on my own. Life can take the strongest man, make him feel so alone. And now sometimes I feel a cold wind blowing through my aching bones. Think back to what my daddy said. He said, boy, in this darkness before the dawn, let your soul shine. Boy, it's better than sunshine, better than moonshine, damn sure better than rain. People don't mind, we all feel this way sometimes. Got to let your soul shine, shine till the break of day. Sometimes a man can feel this emptiness, like a woman has robbed him of his very soul. A woman too, God knows she can feel like this. Hey, when your little world seems cold, you got to let your spirit take control. Talking about sunshine, better than sunshine, better than moonshine, damn sure better than rain. People don't mind, we all feel this way sometimes. Let your soul shine, yeah, shine on and on and on. Oh, it's better than sunshine, better than moonshine, surely better than rain. People don't mind, we all feel this way sometimes. Got to let your soul shine, yeah, shine on and on and on and on and on till the break of day.
Warren Haynes, live in our studio with Soulshine. Now let's talk about Government Mule. For the first time, you've finally put out a DVD. A lot of us have been waiting for this moment. And basically, it's, you know, how did you choose from all of the different shows and all the configurations of the band of what would be the best to put on A Tale of Two Cities?
Well, we had this show from Boston that we had filmed and never released, which was the first show of the Deja Voodoo tour. And every time I would go back and watch it, I would always... think fondly and wonder why we never did release it. And then when we filmed the Chicago show was just completely filled with gremlins. It was one of those nights where technically things were just destined to go wrong, but musically it was a really great show. And we're really good at taking something that's technically wrong and turning it into something that's musically cool. Somehow we've been able to do that throughout our career. All of our live releases had gremlins, and I can't explain why other than the fact that sometimes you got to kind of jump over a hurdle to get where you're trying to go. That particular night, it was freezing cold, and the power went out in the theater in the middle of the show. And so we didn't really know what was going on. We were hoping that the power would come back instantly, so the four of us wound up behind the drum kit kind of doing a little impromptu drum solo or drum circle or whatever in the dark with flashlights because the whole place was powerless. Once that was over, the promoter came up and said, for safety reasons, we have to evacuate the building. So I went up to the front of the stage, again, with only flashlights and some tiny little emergency lights, to tell the crowd with no PA that we had to evacuate the building. And right as I said that, the power came back on. So it's like, oh, well, we're in the clear, so now we can go play again, you know. But the power outage caused all sorts of technical issues with the recording that we had to deal with. But still, when we thought about it, we thought, well, it's kind of cool to tell the whole story. We filmed the whole thing going down, people talking about the power outage, people talking about evacuating the building, us doing this impromptu drum thing with flashlights and only the battery-operated camera microphones picking it up, you know. So it kind of turned into something cool, much more so than the average night. And then the other cool thing about those two shows combined is that there's only five common songs between the two shows, so you get, like, I don't know, 37 songs or something over the course, something like that, over the course of the two shows. So it's a lot of music.
That's an amazing story.
Somehow, all of our live performances tend to go through something like that. Live with a Little Help from Our Friends went through that, live at Roseland, usually because we're not thinking that we're making a record or a DVD at the time. We're just recording it for posterity, and then if we look back and go, wow, that was a really cool show, I wonder if we can technically make it work. Which is good, because a lot of times when you know you're filming or you know you're recording, you tend to think too much, you know, mm-hmm. and the music suffers.
I definitely think we should play something from that Government Mule show where everything went wrong. Here's the encore from the October 15th, 2004 show at the Orpheum Theater in Boston, featured on your A Tale of Two Cities DVD. This is I'm a Ram.
Thank you, Boston.
I'm a Ram, live from Government Mule's A Tale of Two Cities DVD. Now tell me about doing the New Year's Eve show here in New York.
Well, it's turned into a tradition. We've been doing the Beacon Theater for, I guess, 6 or 7 years in a row.
Yeah, and is that going to happen again this year?
No, because the Beacon is closed down for renovation. So we're moving to Hammerstein Ballroom. We usually do 3 nights at the Beacon, and this year we're doing 2 nights at Hammerstein because Hammerstein is bigger, so the 2 nights there is equivalent to 3 nights at the Beacon.
Right.
the tradition continues in the way that on New Year's Eve, the middle set will be a 90-minute set that'll be a surprise to the audience. We'll continue to give little hints here and there of what it might be. But no one ever really knows until we do it. Some people figure it out in advance, but each year has a theme. Last year was the Winter of Love, where we only played songs from 1967. The year before that was with Toots Hibbert from Toots and the Maytals. We did a thing called Dub Side of the Mule, where we did all reggae music for 90 minutes with Toots, which was fabulous. And the year before that, we recreated this television show from the 60s called The Beat, where we turned the Beacon Theater into The Beat. The stage looked like the TV show, and then we did all old rhythm and blues music by artists that had done that TV show and stuff like that. And it's always a challenge to do something different. For some reason, Halloween and New Year's Eve are the two times a year that we do something that we would never do otherwise.
That's fantastic. How do you come up with the ideas for this stuff? Is it a band effort, or are you just kind of like one day you're dreaming and you're just like, I got it?
Well, it's a band effort, and our staff and the management office and people get involved as well. Whoever comes up with the best idea wins, you know. So we have a lot of people kind of working on it, and sometimes we don't decide till the last minute what we're actually going to do, but we have to decide as soon as possible because there's a lot of rehearsal and preparation and set design and stuff like that. We don't want it to become predictable. So it's not like, oh, we do a different album every year or something like that. We try and keep throwing curveballs if we can.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have predicted, you know, Dub Side of the Mule followed by The Winter of Love.
Yeah, and even when they hear Dub Side of the Mule or Winter of Love, they're all scratching their heads and going, well, what does that mean?
Well, I guess while we're waiting to find out the theme for your New Year's Eve show this year at the Hammerstein Ballroom, speaking of which, I'll have some information for you on winning some free tickets for that in a little bit. Once again, here's Warren Haynes live in our studio with Beautifully Broken.
Mysterious, blown in with the night. All this beauty captured in a frame. Visibly shaken, but never stirred. Drives them insane. I see the way she plays her man, and I know I've got to know her name. She's so beautifully broken, shaped by the wind, dangerously twisted. Here I go again. See the way she cast her spell. It's like drowning in moonlight. Discards them when she's done. They're lost in her twilight. I watch her move from star to star. And I wonder why it feels so right. She's so beautifully broken. Can barely see the flaw. especially from a distance. 'Tis always how I fall. Why do I fall for the dangerous ones? The ones that never learn to let go. Why do I lie to myself? Pretend that I can break her when she's already been so beautifully broken. Shaped by the wind. Dangerously twisted. Here I go again. Here I go again. Here I go again.
Warren Haynes, live in our WNEW.com studio with Beautifully Broken. So now let's talk about what's coming next with the Christmas Jam.
Well, the Christmas Jam started 20 years ago in Asheville, North Carolina, my hometown, in a small club, and a bunch of local musicians would get together and jam at the only time of year that it appeared that we all tended to be in town at the same time, which was the Christmas holidays. And whatever small amount of money we raised, we would pick a charity and donate it. A lot of great causes. And in the beginning, we donated money to Vietnam vets, to homeless people, to AIDS victims. There were a lot of wonderful causes. But eventually, as the event grew, we started working with Habitat for Humanity and kind of just stayed with it because it seemed to make the most sense. It went from being a local event to being a regional event to being a national event. And you know, we've had Dave Matthews, Phil Lesh and friends. We've had as diverse artists as, let's say, Branford Marsalis or Ralph Stanley and anywhere in between. A lot of wonderful artists through the years. And, of course, this year is no exception. This is the 20th anniversary, so it's going to be the best lineup so far. I can start naming some of them, the Allman Brothers, the Derek Trucks Band, Johnny Winter, Government Mule, Steve Earle, Ivan Neville's Dumpster Funk, the Del McCoury Band, Joan Osborne, special guest John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin.
Wow.
Ben Harper and Relentless Seven, his new project that he's doing. I know I'm leaving people out because I don't have the list in front of me, but
I think that's enough.
it's an amazing lineup, and it's relatively inexpensive for such an eventful show. And, of course, all the proceeds go to Habitat for Humanity. It's December 12th and 13th in Asheville, North Carolina at the Asheville Civic Center.
Let's see. Remember the Allman Brothers? You played with the Dead. You got your own stuff. You got Government Mule. Now John Paul Jones is playing with you in the Christmas Jam. Any chance he'll be part of the new Zeppelin?
I wouldn't think so.
Oh.
No, I know very little about that. You know, if I had to wish, I would wish that they would all do it together, which doesn't seem to be happening at the moment. But I was lucky enough to go to the reunion in London and see them, which was amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine. I saw all the ripped off YouTube videos there because, you know, I couldn't get over there.
Yeah, but it made us all feel like we were in high school again. It was unbelievable, you know, and not just on a nostalgic level. I thought the show was extremely powerful.
Yeah. All right. So tell me about what's coming up next after the Christmas Jam and after everything. Is there any other shows? Is there any other projects happening?
Well, I'm working on a solo record, which is original music that harkens back to my earliest influences, which were soul music. And I've been in the studio with George Porter Jr. and Ivan Neville and Raymond Weber. And we've been working on a record along with Ian McLaughlin from The Faces. It's very interesting. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long, long time. And then we're also working on another Government Mule record. So it's hard to say which one's going to come next. Maybe the Mule record will get finished first. I don't know. But both are in progress right now.
Well, we're glad to hear that there's going to be no slowing down anytime soon.
Nah, you know, I love my job, so it's good when you love your work.
Yeah. And a lot of people are, you know, speculating about a Dead tour in the spring. Is there any knowledge about that, or it's still kind of...
I hope something would happen in the future, but there's nothing as of now. I had a lot of fun playing for the Obama thing. Mm-hmm. And Phil and I played together a couple of times recently. That was a lot of fun as well.
Yeah.
So I look forward to any time that we can get together and play, you know... Government Mule and Rat Dog did a tour earlier this year, and the Allman Brothers and Rat Dog did a tour earlier this year. The Allman Brothers and Phil Lesh and Friends did a tour, so we're always doing something, but we'll see what happens.
Fantastic. We look forward to everything that you've got coming for us, Warren. Thank you so much for the music, your wisdom, everything. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see Government Mule's New Year's Eve show here in New York City at the Hammerstein Ballroom, along with autographed copies of his Government Mule, A Tale of Two Cities DVDs, and Warren Haynes Presents the Benefit Concert Volume 8 DVDs, maximize your player and register for your chance to win at WNEW.com. Thanks for listening.